from deep inside your radio.
Oh, that's just me sighing. Don't worry about a thing. I'm here, ladies and gentlemen, but the meaning of here is negotiable, of course. The Sirius Satellite Radio and XM Satellite Radio merger is rankling more than a few of the subscribers to the two satellite radio services now that many of their favorite stations and programs, you mean like this one, have been eliminated in new channel lineups. Makes our sign-off quicker. As with most mergers, the two companies are at best trying to remove redundancy, put a positive spin on their new combined effort. In actual practice, that means switching some channels from one service to the other or eliminating programming. This has left some passionate satellite radio subscribers miffed. Longtime Sirius subscriber Stan Petrov lamented the loss of his NBA channels, which were moved over to XM. But why, you ask? Do any channels have to be moved? Aren't the combined channel selections available to all XM and Sirius subscribers? The answer is no. Until now, XM subscribers had to use an XM receiver. Sirius subscribers had to use a Sirius receiver. The two receivers cannot make use of the satellite signal previously assigned to its former competitor. It won't be until next May that a combined receiver will likely be on the market if the merged service survives till then. I know which way I'm praying. Wasn't a combined interoperable receiver a condition of the merger? Yes, it was. Dear Harry, this is on the subject of the Digital Wonderland. From Daniel, I happen to love over-the-air digital TV, but there are certain inexplicable weirdnesses. All right, then. I live, he says, in the San Fernando Valley. Come on, everybody together now. Oh. In an apartment with a rare but wonderful connected antenna, so I get a pretty good signal on all the major stations. It's the odd show that crashes on me every once in a while. I have trouble getting a whole episode of House, for example. But for the most part, clear picture, nice sound. This weekend, however, Channel 5 disappeared. All of a sudden, it was gone. I'd punch in the channel number and get nothing. I feared it would never return. I started channel surfing, and just as suddenly, there was Channel 5, comfortably staking out a space on Channel 31.3. All weekend, that was where to find Digital Channel 5. Then on Monday night, I couldn't raise Channel 31.3. However, Channel 5 was back at Channel 5. Channel 5.1 by then, crystal clear and picture and all. I love that picture, but keeping tabs on it is going to be a little unnerving. The Digital Wonderland, babe. Need a miner's helmet. And you may remember the swirl of news reports. Most of them turned out to be fallacious, about the toxic soup allegedly circulating in the streets of New Orleans after the flood that followed Katrina in 2005. Well, here's the opposite, a story that's been underreported, but that probably is not fallacious. The health threat to Southern California residents posed by the wildfires may have been underestimated by officials. This according to physicsorg.com. So it's an org and a com. Detailed particulate analysis of the smoke produced by previous California wildfires indicates that the composition posed more serious potential threats to health than is generally realized. Excuse me. The paper is entitled Physicochemical and Toxicological Profile of Particulate Matter in Los Angeles During the October 2007 Wildfires. It appears in Environmental Science and Technology. It confirms earlier studies by an air pollution specialist that says fire emissions produce a significantly greater aerosol in size than typically seen in urban environments. Staying indoors may not provide protection from smoke particles in the absence of air conditioning or the ability to recirculate filtered indoor air. This is because the fire particles can penetrate indoor structures more readily than particulates, for example, from vehicle emissions. The fires produce a dangerous mix. The chemical composition is different than during normal days. Traces of biomass burning, potassium and levoglucosan, were elevated by twofold during the fire period. Water-soluble organic carbon was also higher. This makes these particles from wood smoke more bioavailable, more readily absorbable by our human systems. These two facts, they can penetrate structures and get into human systems, are a matter of concern. More aggressive measures to avoid smoke seem to deserve study, including distribution of masks and evacuation to air-conditioned environments and closure of non-smoke-secured schools, says one of the researchers. So, breathe deep. Enjoy till the next fire. Hello, welcome to the show. And of course, I mean deeply. There is words. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is your brain on the war on drugs. From, according to the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, which is still printing. Interesting. An internal investigation by the CIA has found that agency officials engaged in a cover-up. The CIA, really? To hide agency negligence in the downing of a private airplane over Peru in 2001 as part of a mistaken attack on an aircraft suspected of carrying illegal narcotics. They're never going to be suspected of that again. Excerpts of an internal CIA report released this week accuse agency officials of lying to members of Congress. Why, that's what Ollie North was convicted of, and he's a respected and withholding crucial information from criminal investigators and senior Bush administration officials. The disclosure could lead to the reopening of the probe into whether agency officials committed crimes in the attack on the aircraft, which was actually not transporting drugs. You want to guess what it was transporting, ladies and gentlemen? Because it wasn't drugs? What would be, like, mistaken for drugs in the eyes of the CIA? Missionaries. It was transporting missionaries. This is your brain on missionaries. The attack killed Veronica Bowers and her infant daughter and injured three others, including Bowers' husband and young son. It was carried out by a Peruvian warplane working with CIA intelligence craft. Those two words, of course, are in quotes, intelligence and craft. Republican Representative Peter Hoekstra, who used to be the head of the Intelligence Committee when the Republicans ran things in Congress, described the revelations as a dark stain on the CIA. And that's pretty dark fabric to begin with, so to say these deaths did not have to happen is more than an understatement, says Hoekstra. He said the agency's inspector general had uncovered continuous efforts to cover the matter up and potentially block criminal investigation. We'll have more inspector general reports moments from now. The missionary family came from Hoekstra's district. That might explain his interest. CIA spokesman said that the CIA director recognizes the seriousness of the matter. The investigative report has been turned over to the Justice Department. In 2005, the Justice Department closed its own investigation without any prosecutions. Good work over there, Justice. All right, then. You will not be intoxicated by those missionaries, ladies and gentlemen. And now, it's time for me to read the trades for you. This is from DefenseTech.org. Three guesses what they're about. From a blog at Defense Tech, PACs rumbling with Afghan rebels? Question mark. I'll read it for you, won't I? The other day, says this blogger at DefenseTech.org, I got an email from a source of mine who claimed some of his buddies working in the private security industry in Pakistan and Afghanistan told him that Pakistani intelligence officers have been found in, quote, non-life-supporting postures after skirmishes or airstrikes on insurgents in Afghanistan. In other words, elements within Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI, are directly aiding anti-U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan, sometimes engaging in combat operations with the insurgents. Really? In Pakistan? The intelligence? That's me interpolating feigned disbelief. But I go forward. Here's a brief transcript of a conversation published in DefenseTech.org with the Pentagon's policy chief, Eric Edelman, on this subject. Defense Tech. In Afghanistan, have you seen any evidence of Pakistani agencies' involvement in assisting the Taliban against U.S. troops and also within the federally administered tribal areas in Pakistan? Edelman. I think that, you know, there's a long history here. The Pakistan government, for a very long time, has regarded Afghanistan as its strategic depth. And clearly there have been relationships that go back to the Mujahideen era that have persisted. We've had some concerns about it. We've expressed those concerns. We had a meeting with the head of ISI, General Pasha. My view is we ought to give him a chance to see how he can handle his new responsibilities and go from there. Defense Tech. So is that a yes? Edelman. You will have to make a judgment on whether that was a yes or not. Defense Tech. So you have seen involvement? Edelman. As I said, there have been persistent ties that have withstood over a long period of time, and we've expressed concerns over those ties. Just reviewing, ladies and gentlemen, ties between the Pakistani intelligence agency and the Taliban. The kind of ties that were cause for war when they were alleged to be between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. But we've expressed our concerns. Is that a yes? Hard to tell, ain't it? When I read the trades for you. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. More about Iraq. The last April, top Bush administration officials launched a round of charges that Iran had stepped up covert arms assistance to militias in Iraq. We all remember that. Now, at least one report, says that a U.S. military task force has been passing on data to the multinational force in Iraq that told a very different story than the story of Iran supplying arms to the militias. The stories about stuff being manufactured in Iran, you remember that. The data collected by the task force in the previous 6 weeks showed that relatively few of the weapons found in Shia military caches were manufactured in Iran. According to the data compiled by the task force and made available to an academic research project last July, only 70 weapons believed to have been manufactured in Iran had been found in the post-invasion weapons caches between mid-February and the second week in April. And those weapons represented only 17% of the weapons. I can't make any heads or tails of this sentence. Those weapons represented only 17% of the weapons found in caches that had any Iranian weapons in them during that period. The actual proportion of Iranian-made weapons to total weapons found was significantly lower than that because the task force was finding many more weapons caches in Shia areas that did not have any Iranian weapons in them. Okay. All right, I'll do the math later in the luxury of in the leisure time that I have between episodes of this broadcast. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Apologies of the Week. And first up, Senator Joe Lieberman on Meet the Press.
You've always, as a public servant, held other people accountable. You were the only one to speak out on the floor, for example, against Bill Clinton during the time of the impeachment. Holding yourself accountable, looking back over the last 6 weeks, 2 months or so, what are the statements that you most regret?
Well, I don't want to go into the details. Let me just say this. I do regret, as I said to the caucus afterward publicly, there were some things I said in the heat of a campaign that I wish I had said more clearly. There are other things, frankly, I wish I hadn't said at all. That happens to all of us in the heat of a campaign, but nonetheless, I regret it.
I hear the word regret, but not the word apology.
Well, I regret it. I mean, I'm going forward. You can take from the word regret what you will. I wish I had not said some of the things I've said. But again, we all do it.
Everybody does it. The best excuse in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody does it. I don't know. Personally, I think he's bad for the Joes. Dateline Columbia, South Carolina, a fundamentalist Christian university, one whose name you'll recognize, has apologized for racist policies, including a one-time ban on interracial dating that wasn't lifted until 9 years ago, and its unwillingness to admit black students until 1971. Bob Jones University said its rules on race were shaped by culture instead of the Bible. We failed to accurately represent the Lord and to fulfill the commandment to love others as ourselves. For these failures, we are profoundly sorry. Though no known antagonism toward minorities or expressions of racism on a personal level have ever been tolerated on our campus, we allowed institutional policies to remain in place that were racially hurtful, said the statement from the university. The interracial dating ban was lifted in March 2000, not long after the policy became an issue in the Republican presidential primary. Bob Jones University President Stephen Jones decided to issue the apology because the school still receives questions about its views on race. Dateline Ossining, New York, a fire commissioner forwarded along a racially offensive email to an assistant fire chief who's in hot water with village officials for then sending it along to others. Bruce Bell, a commissioner with the independent hose company, sent the chain email to Assistant Chief Thomas Reddy, a former village detective. The assistant chief has received written reprimands for forwarding the email. A slideshow in which a Barack Obama caricature says, "I's yo new president." Village manager Linda Cooper and Mayor William Hanauer says Bell had reached out to them after the slideshow surfaced to express regret. He has apologized for his actions as well, says Cooper. So that's not just a regret, that's an apology. Joe, see, you can do both. Dayline Denver, Greeley, Colorado's mayor apologized this week, saying he made a mistake when he showed school children a fake $3 bill depicting President-elect Obama wearing a Middle Eastern headdress. A theme emerging here, perhaps, ladies and gentlemen? The Greeley Tribune reported Mayor Ed Clark said a girl at University School's middle school asked him if he had an extra dollar for lunch. Clark took out his wallet and didn't have a dollar, but showed the girl the fake bill. Clark works as head of security at the school. Said the girl let other children around a lunch table see the bill before he took it back and put it away. A parent complained, prompting the apology. "It wasn't meant to be hurtful," Clark said. He said he never told the kids Obama is a Muslim and that he knows Obama is a Christian. The bill doesn't depict Obama in a turban, Clark said, but instead in a prince's hat in the Middle Eastern style. Deadline Fresno, Bob Hall, general manager of Channel 30, has released an on-air statement about comments he made during jury selection in Fresno County Superior Court that led a judge to dismiss the jury, Poole. During jury selection in Judge Gary Orozco's courtroom this week, Hall said he couldn't be fair in a Hispanic man's trial because research done by the station showed Hispanic males have a propensity to commit violent crimes. Hall and nearly 50 other prospective jurors who heard his comments were dismissed. His statement, which was read by news anchors at his station, Channel 30, said he regretted the comments and apologized for offending anyone. See, Joe? Regret and apology. In the statement, Hall said he did not mean to imply that his newsroom had conducted research on minorities and crimes. So, I guess he was conducting research on his own. Another mayor is in trouble and is apologizing. The mayor of Rexburg, Idaho, is apologizing for comments made on a bus 2 weeks ago. Three students chanted, "Assassinate Obama." Detecting a thread here in the apologies, ladies and gentlemen. While riding a school bus, Rexburg Mayor Sean Larson says there's no excuse for the comments and asks parents to be careful with the things they say in front of their children. Larson says he's received emails from all over the country and even from Canada in reaction to the story. In a letter to the media, the mayor says, "I am extremely sorry that this incident occurred, and I do not believe that it reflects the values which make our community a great place to live and raise a family." As long as you're not Obama. Spacewalkers Heidi Marie Stephenson Piper. Yes, name is too long to be an astronaut. I know they've relaxed the regulations. And Stephen Bowen have completed the first of four extravehicular activities at the space station. It appears that one of the grease guns used by Stephenson Piper leaked grease into her tool bag. I just like saying tool bag. While efforts were made to clean excess grease from her gloves, a tool kit liberated from the bag, floating away into space. Stephenson Piper, although she can't be blamed due to the grease incident before the bag floated away, apologized upon arriving back in the airlock after the 7-hour spacewalk. Apologized to space for the tool bag, you see. Five disciplines of the new Hanover County, North Carolina Sheriff's Office will be disciplined after undercover deputies zapped a pallbearer with a taser at his father's funeral, according to Sheriff Sid Causey. One of the five facing disciplinary action is Chief Deputy Ed McMahon. Well, he doesn't have a house, but he's got a new job. Probably a different one, you think? He was in charge of arresting Gladwin Ross III when the 42-year-old man attended his father's funeral. Also, two lieutenants and two undercover deputies who arrested Russ will be disciplined for their poor timing caused by miscommunication. Family members reported mourners were so alarmed by the arrest as pallbearers loaded the casket into the hearse that they fled the funeral before Russ's father was buried with military honors. In the chaos, one of the deputies' guns fell out of its holster. "I apologize to anyone who was there," said the sheriff. "That was a bad decision." Dateline London, The Royal Bank of Scotland chairman, Sir Tom MacKillop, told investors he was profoundly sorry for the crisis, which left the bank needing a £20 billion, that's only $30 billion now, government rescue package. I, as the chairman of the RBS group, both personally and in the office I hold, am profoundly sorry about the position we've reached, MacKillop said in an extraordinary shareholders meeting in Edinburgh. He acknowledged that his merger with another bank had exacerbated RBS's problems. With the benefit of the knowledge we now have, it is clear that the timing of this acquisition has added to our difficulties. Aren't we still encouraging banks to merge here? Yes, we are. Dateline Berea, Ohio, Cleveland Browns general manager Phil Savage. Did he change his name too? From Wiener? Like the radio guy, has apologized to a fan whom he sent a profane email to following Monday night's game against the Buffalo Bills. Savage used an expletive in his response to the fan who criticized the general manager in several email exchanges. We have both apologized to each other since, Savage added. A U.S. mobile phone company, Verizon, says some of its employees gained unauthorized access and viewed an inactive personal account of President-elect Barack Obama. Is there a theme? In a statement, Verizon Wireless President and Chief Executive Lowell McAdam apologized to Obama. He said the device in question was a simple voice phone that did not have email capabilities. Obama's aides also said the president-elect's voicemail messages and emails were not accessed. The Japanese Prime Minister Taro Aso apologized this week for appearing to insult doctors, an important political interest group, by saying many of them lack common sense. Employees at U.S. Airways are looking into how an 83-year-old woman in a wheelchair flying Monday from New York to Tampa, Florida, instead found herself at an airport in Puerto Rico. She'd gone to Newark, New York for a day trip from Tampa. She was supposed to be coming back to Tampa. Somehow an attendant wheeled the woman to the wrong flight, her daughter said. A U.S. Airways spokesman said the airline paid for her food and hotel and flew her home first class. We have apologized to the family. British newspaper The Daily Mail has apologized to actor David Duchovny and his family for suggesting that the star engaged in a romantic relationship with a tennis coach. And finally, is there a theme? A Fairfield, California priest accused of forcing a parishioner to leave church grounds because she had signs supporting Barack Obama on her car has apologized. Reverend Sebastian Mayer of Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church told churchgoers that he wanted the car to be moved because he thought it was parked illegally and blocking access to the church. He said he identified the car by the Obama signs on it but did not mean to be critical of the president-elect. He apologized for his poor judgment and said he did not intend to be disrespectful. Oh, and the Smashing Pumpkins concert in Chicago has been postponed. The band apologized for the inconvenience. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Satisfaction. I'm gonna get me sweets to eat. No one told me lock the doors and windows of your house to take the consequence. Nobody told me someone's ball like fingers would make up with that which I love a bit. There's how just now somebody stole my thunder. I wonder if they know it's mine. Or did they mean to rob me blind?
This is Le Show.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And oh, no. The government of Prime Minister Maliki in Iraq, our guy, is systematically dismissing inspectors general who were installed to fight corruption in Iraqi ministries by order of the American Occupation Administration. I believe that was Paul Bremer, which had hoped to bring Western standards of accountability. I think they've got them. The dismissals, which were confirmed by senior Iraqi and American government officials this week, have come as estimates of official Iraqi corruption have soared. Interesting. One Iraqi former chief investigator testified before Congress that $13 billion, well, you know that. We had that here. The moves have not been publicly announced by Maliki's government, but word of them has begun to circulate through the bureaucracy. While some Iraqi officials defended the dismissals, saying there had been no political motivation, I guess they just needed the chairs, others pointed to the secrecy involved as supporting their view that those removed had lost their posts without good cause. Each of Iraq's 30 ministries has one inspector general. Although some have been notably quiet, others have vigorously investigated both current and foreign ministers and other senior officials. And the top of Iraqi officialdom have found ample reason to fear them, according to New York Times. In one case, investigations of a former electricity minister landed him in jail before he escaped and fled to the United States. Hey, welcome! Love to have a felonious former electricity minister here. What can we do for you? What would you like? And an oil ministry inspector general detailed extensive smuggling and extortion schemes that he said bedeviled the oil industry. A former public works minister, a Kurd, complained before she fled the country that her ministry's inspector general at the time, a Shiite, had been hyperactive and had brought charges based more on political considerations than actual wrongdoing. So, business as usual in Iraq. Ohio Governor Ted Strickland is standing by an agency director who okayed improper computer checks for confidential information on, here are three words you haven't heard in the last week, Joe the Plumber. And use state emails for political fundraising. An inspector general's investigation in Ohio found that Helen Jones Kelly, director of the Department of Job and Family Services, had no legitimate reasons to check on Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher. It also confirmed she improperly used her state email account to raise campaign money for President-elect Obama. Republican leaders who cited the report's findings called on the governor to fire her. They were stunned she'll remain on the job. And speaking of those three words, Joe the Plumber is signing a book deal addressing his ideas about American values. He is signed with a small publisher, Pearlgate Publishing in Texas. Publisher says paperback copies will go on sale December 1st. Ladies and gentlemen, this is November. Paperback will go on sale December 1st. It's going to be good. Well written and well printed. The deal is not likely to come close to the $7 million rumored to be offered for Sarah Palin, who lost. It reminds me of when Marsha Clark got $4 million for her book on how she lost the OJ trial. You know, losing pays. Joe the Plumber's book is being written by Thomas Tabak. Who is he? He's the author of a novel, the only other book published by Pearlgate. So if you want to be published by Pearlgate, let Tom Tabak have at you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know that rumors have been swirling all week in Washington and in the media about Barack Obama's possible choice for Secretary of State. And a lot of the rumors have, in the later part of the week, circulated around who's been circulating the rumors. Allegations that it's been people in the Hillary or Bill Clinton camp that have been circulating rumors about her impending selection and his alacrity in meeting the conditions laid down by the Obama people, centering around the activities of his foundation and his fundraising, most particularly centering around a Canadian mining magnate, Mr. Joustra, who accompanied Bill Clinton on a trip to Kazakhstan. 2 weeks later, his company won. It was a social visit, dinner. 2 weeks later, his firm won a lucrative mining contract in Kazakhstan. And a little while later, Mr. Joustra gave, I think the figure was $30 million, a huge gift to the Clinton Foundation. See how things work? Well, they're not going to work that way anymore, or at least that's what we're hearing as a condition of Hillary Clinton accepting the new Secretary of State role. But according to the latest reports, discussions continue. The announcement will not be officially made until after Thanksgiving. Yes, it sounds like another edition of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something, the Obama years.
Making sure we understand each other.
Mr. President-elect, I couldn't understand you better if I were you. Which, of course, I'm not. The people spoke very clearly on that point.
Well, I appreciate that. But just, reviewing our agreement here.
Mm-hmm. No comments to the media until the official announcement.
That's right.
Bill makes a clean break with the foundation, cancels all speaking engagements, and makes public his list of donors.
Right.
I get to pick my own staff. No John Bolton's shoved two levels beneath me.
Right.
And I go directly to you, not through the National Security Advisor, whoever that might be.
Right.
And we did leave the issue of Joe Biden hanging.
We did. And we are.
Okay. I mean,
I know what you mean. Mm. We understand each other, remember?
Yes, I do.
So, you'll let me know when your folks are okay with all this.
Mm-hmm. Weekend okay?
Weekends are fine. Last time I looked, this is a full-time job.
Of course, that's the way it looked to me. I mean, way back, last year when I was looking
okay, at... Okay, I'm late for hoops. Let me know.
Okay, Bill. You can come back in.
So,
So, you were right. Again.
Told you. They just wanted the thrill of the hunt. Make it too easy for them to get you. They don't value you highly enough.
Well, you'd think the 18 million votes I got would take care of that.
You would think that. And you'd be wrong. They're pissed about the leaks, right?
Very. He said if this kind of thing happens after January 20th, I can read about our policy positions in the Washington Post.
Yeah, that's a cute line. Well, maybe Mr. Discipline could pull it off. Maybe he can't. Now, where is he down to on the foundation and the speeches and such?
Same place. Disclose everything, shut down everything.
Oh, hold on a minute there, Toots. I thought...
They gave a little bit on speeches, actually.
Cool.
You can help write mine.
Fine. Listen, babe, it's your turn. I'll do whatever it takes. They want donor lists, we'll generate a donor list.
You mean the donor list?
Well, since they've been anonymous up to now, it will, by definition, be the donor list.
Yes. But, I mean, it will contain the names of all the donors. They're expecting that.
All the names on the list will be donors, absolutely.
And there won't be any donors whose names aren't on the list?
Wouldn't be much of a donor's list if there were.
No. No, it wouldn't.
Okay, then. And no speeches?
You can help write mine.
You know what? That's fine. I mean, it's your turn. My job is to do whatever it takes within reason.
You're not going to withhold the names of certain donors?
Withhold? You make it sound like I'm the Internal Revenue Service or something. Well, you know, I've given instructions that my database be faithfully duplicated in an encrypted format. Mm-hmm. Now, if for some reason in the transition team's attempt to decrypt, some of the data becomes corrupted, I don't think that rises to the level of withholding. Do you?
I know what you're doing.
Oh, yo, this isn't about me. This is about you. From now on, it's about you. Trust me.
Brother, if you screw this up, there will be thermonuclear hell to pay.
Well, it's not like I haven't heard that before, but yeah, this time I get it. Mm-hmm. I hear you. Our long, strange trip just got punched for another departure. That's what friends are for. Babe, You've got a friend.
Okay. I'm going to tell Maggie Williams to get things moving.
Cool. I'm going to call all my folks. Tell them to make sure none of those names get corrupted in the decrypting. That's what you want, right?
Bill.
I mean, that's what I want, but... Okay, it's done. Savor it, Hillary. Madeline Albright and Condi Rice were just a warm-up. Mm-hmm. You've made it official. The Secretary of State is now a woman's job.
Youthful angst and middle-aged hunger for power. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the Obama years.
Nesse fogo me queimei.
Na cidade brilhante.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Telegraph newspaper in London, former Attorney General Goldsmith's, Lord Goldsmith's advice to the British government, saying that the invasion of Iraq was legal, is flawed in two fundamental respects, according to Britain's most respected former judge. Lord Bingham, retired in September as senior law lord, said if he's right in concluding the 2003 invasion was unauthorized by law, there was, of course, a serious violation of international law and of the rule of law, quoting the former senior law lord of Great Britain. It's the first time Lord Bingham has expressed his views about the legal advice given to Tony Blair by the former Attorney General. Yeah, we're looking back. It's, he says, the opinion of the Attorney General that the invasion was justified is flawed in two fundamental respects. First, it was not plain that Iraq had failed to comply in a manner justifying resort to force, and there were no strong factual grounds or hard evidence to show that it had. Hans Blix and his team of weapon inspectors had found no weapons of mass destruction, were making progress, and expected to complete their task in a matter of months. Secondly, quoting Lord Bingham, it passes belief that a determination whether Iraq had failed to avail itself of its final opportunity was intended to be taken otherwise than collectively by the Security Council. The moment, he continued, that a state treats the rules of international law as binding on others but not on itself, the compact on which the law rests is broken. But it's not the Britain you think it is. It's not the Britain of dotty older women calling, walkies! Calculations by the British Federation of Herpetologists, this is also from the Telegraph, indicate that there are now as many as 8 million reptiles and amphibians being kept as pets in the UK, compared to an estimated dog population of only 6.5 million. The growth in reptile numbers is so rapid that within years, they will overtake the country's 9 million cats to become Britain's most popular pets. There are now more pet reptiles than pet dogs in the UK. You only have to look, says the chairman of the Herpetology Federation, at how the market has grown. They have moved, he says, from being niche to being mainstream. Somebody mainstreamed the reptiles while we weren't looking. He continues, they're far more suitable as pets than are animals which are perceived as more traditional pets, such as cats and dogs. Reptiles fit today's modern lifestyles. All right, then. As they are less time-consuming and can also be easier to keep. Most are kept in heated tanks for at least part of the day. They require less upkeep than other caged animals. The little waste they produce is solid and dry. Breeders believe that well-known reptile owners, such as the comedian and now suspended British TV chat show host Jonathan Ross, who owns an iguana, have added to booming sales. The population has been calculated through analysis of suppliers of reptile food. Since 2004, when the reptile population was recorded at 5 million, the number of crickets sold in the UK has doubled. Over the same period, the number of locusts produced has more than quadrupled. Sales of frozen rodents have also increased dramatically. I know, it's sounding good right about now with the economy and everything, frozen rodents. But, they're for the reptiles. Don't you dare. Keep your hands away from the frozen rodents. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? I am getting a little peckish for a frozen rodent.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Maybe just a nice vole cube. The 38 countries that pledged to restrain their emissions of climate change-inducing greenhouse gases are failing, according to new figures released by the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCCCCCCC, the body charged with overseeing global emission reductions. It says, overall, greenhouse emissions dropped by 894 million metric tons between 1990 and 2006, but it found emissions had grown by 2.3% from 2000 to 2006, and the 16-year dip was due entirely to the drop in economic activity in former Eastern Bloc countries such as Russia after the fall of communism. Most industrialized European nations, as well as China and the U.S., have been spewing more carbon dioxide since 1990. It cautions that emissions may be even worse now, noting that the statistics in the study are already nearly 3 years old. Water vapor is known to be Earth's most abundant greenhouse gas, but the extent of its contribution to global warming has been debated. Using recent NASA satellite data, researchers have estimated more precisely than ever the heat-trapping effect of water in the air, validating the role of the gas as a critical component of climate change. Andrew Dessler and colleagues from Texas A&M confirmed the heat-amplifying effect of water vapor is potent enough to double the climate warming caused by increased levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Dissolving carbon dioxide in salt water could improve the prospects of storing the greenhouse gas in underground aquifers, say Texas engineers. According to Nature, the rise in CO2 concentrations from fossil fuel burning has prompted a variety of proposals for how to capture and store the gas. No one really knows whether CO2 will remain stored if compressed and then injected into underground water-bearing porous rocks over many decades, or whether it will slowly leak from the aquifers it is pumped into. A chemical engineer at University of Texas is hoping to develop a method that ensures the gas stays put by pumping salt water out of a suitable aquifer, dissolving the CO2 into the brine, and then re-injecting the solution back in. They don't know if it'll work yet. I'd suggest frozen rodents, but I think that doesn't really speak to the problem. Vast numbers of marine jelly balls now appearing off the Australian east coast. I'm getting hungry between frozen rodents and jelly balls, but this is different, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald. They could be part of the planet's mechanism for combating global warming. The jellyfish-like animals are known as salps. Salps, S-A-L-P-S. New insult. You bleeding salp. And their main food is phytoplankton, which absorbs the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide in the top level of the ocean. Of course, that comes from the atmosphere. Salps are notoriously difficult for scientists to study in the lab, and consequently little attention has been paid to their ecological role until recently. Dr. Mark Baird is part of a marine survey last month that found a massive abundance of salps in the waters around Sydney. G'day, salps. They were up to 10 times what they were when first surveyed 70 years ago. Different species are found around the world, and attention is now being paid to what effect they might have on global warming. They're also of interest because they're thought to be displacing krill, which is a key food source for many marine animals down south, including whales. So they're good, they're bad. We can't figure out the salps. They grow to about half a centimeter. They're closer to vertebrates such as humans than to jellyfish because they have the rudiments of a primitive nervous system. They're the fastest reproducing multi-celled animal on the planet and can double their numbers several times a day. Watch out for the salps. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, an award-winning copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/the show and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like making friends with the Salps if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Address for this broadcast and playlist of the songs and musical numbers performed hereon are available at the constantly evolving harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks and to Pam Halstead. And heads up, the annual Christmas sing-along shows presented by myself and Judith Owen start a week from tomorrow or Tuesday or something like that in Seattle, and move to Chicago, New Orleans, and Los Angeles. Check it out. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.